It's so great to be back here with you all, preaching again. Feels like coming home. I'm sorry that the rest of my family is not here this morning. We thought that we would all be here, but Eleonora isn't feeling very well, so Pat stayed home with her and Oliver this morning. So some of you may remember that in my family, we are big gardeners. We have big raised beds in our yard that Pat built a couple years ago, and lots of plants, and we're constantly expanding our flower beds. And spring is pruning season in the garden. And it just so happens that I am the chief pruner in the Miller house. So sometime in March, I head out with my loppers and my pruning shears to prune back our limelight hydrangea, red twig dogwood, apple trees, blueberries, blackberries, rose bushes. And pruning something for the first time always scares me a little bit because I'm not an expert gardener. And I have often been afraid of doing it wrong. I'm a little less afraid as the years go on and I gain more experience. But I still sometimes wonder, what if I cut it in the wrong place and kill this plant that I have come to love so much? What if it looks really terrible after I'm done pruning? But I have learned that not pruning at all is often far worse than pruning a little bit haphazardly, and that in general, most plants are pretty resilient and forgiving. I follow a gardener named Jess Zander on Instagram, who has an account called You Can Do It Gardening. On her account, she posts tips and videos about how to take care of your garden that are especially geared towards beginning gardeners and average homeowners. Well, it turns out most people are a little intimidated by pruning. So she cheers us on saying, you can do this, grab those pruners and create what she calls ruthless carnage. Or a massive pile of pruned branches. So this year, with inspiration from Jess and my experience of watching plants bounce back from my pruning, I created some ruthless carnage. Pat came home from work one day to find a massive pile of branches nearly 3 feet high from various plants around our yard, and he took one look at our red twig dogwood, which had been kind of overgrown, and I had mercilessly hacked back. And he said, Jess, what have you done to our dogwood? I did not consent to this. And I just shrugged. And I said, it was out of control. It needed it. Don't worry. It's going to grow back better and healthier than before. I 95% believe that. Like I said, I'm no gardening expert, but I've learned that pruning is important for several reasons. First, it makes plants stronger. Before I started pruning our limelight hydrangea, for example, the branches would bend over under the weight of the blooms, especially after a heavy rain, and it would look really sad and floppy. But now, after years of regular pruning, the branches are strong enough to hold the blooms up straight. The second reason that pruning is so important is to stimulate new growth. When you prune back any plant, it sends a signal to grow more vigorously so that the plant becomes healthier and more robust than if you had left it alone. Thirdly, pruning prevents disease. Taking out extra branches prevents them from rubbing together, creating wounds on crossing limbs that can let in pathogens. It also helps promote better air circulation, which keeps plants healthy. And cutting off diseased branches from a beloved plant can actually be the difference between that plant's survival and certain death. Lastly, pruning can create more blooms on flowering plants by encouraging them to branch, and it can increase fruit quality on fruiting plants by sending the signal to grow just a few large, strong, juicy fruits rather than producing a bunch of smaller, lower quality fruit. Thanks for coming to my gardening lesson. Pruning is not an act of cruelty. It is an act of love. We prune the plants that we care about so that they can thrive and grow into their true potential. In our gospel text for today that Ed read for us, Jesus compares himself and his followers to a grapevine that God cares for by lovingly pruning it so it can reach its full potential. All the branches on that vine are getting pruned. Did you notice that? Everything is getting pruned. It's just a matter of degrees. If a branch doesn't bear fruit, it's pruned so that it doesn't mess up the rest of the plant. If a branch does not bear fruit, it's pruned so that it, doesn't spread disease to the rest of the plant. If a branch does bear fruit, it's pruned anyway so that it bears more fruit. So no matter what, everything on this plant is getting pruned. Now, he also says that branches that don't bear fruit are cut off and thrown into a fire. Now, I never really understood this before I became a gardener. I'm like, wow, this seems really violent. We're throwing these branches into a fire. And then I learned that when you have disease in your plants, if you try to compost those branches, those diseases will keep spreading into the plant. You have to burn them to get rid of the pathogens. So it's important for maintaining that healthy vine. Before I learned all of this about pruning, this passage made me very uncomfortable. This language of God coming at us with pruning shears and cutting off anyone who wasn't performing well or bearing fruit and tossing them into a fire, like I said, sounds pretty violent and terrible. And even if you are performing well, yikes, God's still going to come and lop you off so that you perform even better. It sounds pretty scary, especially for those of us who grew up in Mennonite and Christian culture where there was a very real fear of being cut off from your community if you failed to follow the rules or do what the church expected you to be. So for many of us, there is nothing more terrifying than that feeling of being cut off, rejected, alone. And listening to this passage can bring up that very real fear, or even memories of times when we have experienced this kind of rejection or communal violence. It's easy to read it and hear, "You better dwell in Jesus and do the right things or you're in trouble. Keep your toes in line, don't be a problem, or you're gonna be chopped off and burned." That's how I grew up understanding this passage. But I don't think that's how this passage is meant to be read. This group of verses is included in Jesus' parting words to his disciples just before he is taken to be executed. Jesus' last words to those he loved weren't a threat meant to instill fear. They were to bring reassurance in a difficult time. The metaphor of vine and branches indwelling in Christ and being pruned by God is meant to bring comfort to Jesus' dearest friends who are feeling anxious and scared about to lose someone who they love deeply and who are living under the constant threat of violence from their oppressors. But if Jesus' words are truly words of comfort, why don't we always hear that passage this way? I think one problem is that we come to this passage from a lens of Western individualism rather than one of communal well-being. We hear Jesus say, "You are the branches," and immediately imagine ourselves as a single branch on the vine, with no autonomy, waiting its fate at the hands of the gardener. But this is probably not the way that Jesus' disciples understood Jesus' words. This image of vine and branches was one that was familiar in Jesus' Jewish tradition. Jesus' Jewish audience would have understood this image of vine and branches as one that represents a whole community and speaks to the health of the vine as a whole, the benefits of the whole, the well-being of everyone. But in contrast, in many Western churches, preachers have preached this text from an individualistic, even capitalist lens that plays into this evangelical obsession with personal relationship with Jesus and personal performance over the importance of the spiritual community. So it frames the whole passage around whether or not you are being a productive member of the church. Thanks to capitalism, that only values us for our ability to produce. It also narrows our focus to wondering whether we are right with Jesus enough to stay in the vine, instead of thinking about how we're part of a whole community of this grapevine, something bigger and more beautiful than any single branch, and that the whole plant works together to bear fruit in community, not in isolation. Another problem we have when we hear this passage is we often miss this part where Jesus clearly states that abiding in him is a choice. Jesus tells his disciples, if you choose to abide in me, you will bear fruit. No exceptions. As followers of Jesus, we have the autonomy to choose whether we are a fruit-bearing branch or not. And we don't have to do anything. If we simply rest and dwell, abiding in the love of Jesus in the vine, the fruit is going to come. No striving, no worrying, no trying to force ourselves to bear fruit or fear being cut off. Simply choosing to rest in divine love will make us fruitful. And there is no threat of being cut off when we are dwelling in that love. When we choose to be branches connected to the vine, we choose what kind of people we will be. People rooted in love, community, and connection to the whole. And these kind of people always bear good fruit. That is Jesus' invitation, to be part of the vine and live our lives dwelling together in divine love. In other words, Jesus invites us to lean on him and one another, to stop striving to be productive in isolation without the support of Christ or the community. Trying to do so on our own is like a branch that tries to produce fruit when it's already disconnected from the plant. It's impossible. Impossible to bear fruit alone as a single branch cut off from love and community. Instead, we are invited to be branches that rest, resting in the vine of Jesus and in the beloved community, letting that love energy flow into us and produce the fruit of the kingdom, fruit of justice, joy, and peace. This message of love, connectedness, rest, and interdependence is radically countercultural in our individualistic capitalist culture, where we have been taught to value productivity, busyness, and personal achievement as markers of success. Left unchecked, individualism and capitalism can burn us out, and the price we pay is that we often don't have the energy or the love left to sustain important anti-oppression, community-building, kingdom work that we are called to do. Some might even go so far to say, this is what capitalism is designed to do. Tire out the working class so that we're too tired to change oppressive structures that benefit those at the top. When we feel tired and overwhelmed, it's hard to think about things like systemic change. And it can be overwhelming. And especially when we feel like we're trying and nothing is improving. We can start to believe the lie that the reason we are failing at changing the world is because we aren't trying hard enough. That it's an individual failure, that we are weak, we lack the stamina needed to make real change. But it's just not true. Pushing harder in an effort to produce more is what capitalism has conditioned us to do, because in order for a capitalist economy to thrive, people have to be producing more and more and more and working more and more and more and more all the time to increase profits. This is not what Jesus wants for us. Instead, Jesus invites us to stop striving and abide. Abide in him and trust that the fruit will develop and the change will come in us as his love flows into our branches. The Western capitalist lens we bring to this text would have us believe that we all individually need to be producing fruit constantly as much as possible. But it isn't true. And that's not how plants work either. Did you know that a grapevine has many branches, but not all branches produce fruit at the same time? In a single season, some healthy branches bear fruit, while others are growing so that they can produce fruit in a later season. Then, the branches that do produce fruit are pruned back so they can rest and regrow until they are ready to fruit again in the future. Not all branches are producing at the same time. We rely on the entire vine to produce the fruit necessary in one season, not individual branches. Sometimes it is our season to be the productive branch who bears much fruit so that we can give others a break And some season, it is our turn to rest in the vine while others bear fruit, and we will fruit in a later season. Grape growers call this a cycle of fruiting and renewal. But whether we are in a season of renewal or a season of fruit bearing, we are participating in holy kingdom work and are an important part of the vine. This is the gift of community and the way movements for change are able to sustain themselves. We depend on each other during our seasons of rest and renewal so that the important fruit of God's love and liberation in the world is always being produced no matter what. And in the same way, others depend on us to bear fruit when they are in a season of resting in Jesus. Activists have shared this concept that some rest while others take the lead for as long as anti-oppression movements have existed. They are wise enough to know that everyone marching and protesting and advocating all at the same time leads to an inevitable collective burnout. It is not sustainable. Just as those who are resting rely on those acting to carry the mission forward, so do those acting rely on those who are resting to take up the mantle when they need a break. This is why change-making and shaping a better world is about the work of the collective, not an individual. And it's why it's important to look at things from the perspective of the whole grapevine rather than a single branch. I've reminded myself of this in the fight for Palestinian liberation that so many of you are a part of. I watched the other week as Christians, including members of Mennonite Action, were arrested for obstructing the entrance to a Senate cafeteria in Washington, D.C., declaring nobody eats until Gaza eats, and demanding that our government send food and aid instead of bombs, a message that continues to be ignored as just last week our government approved yet another massive spending bill to send more weapons to the Israeli army with our tax dollars. This week, I have watched in awe at the strength of student protest encampments spreading across our country and across the world, as Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and other students and professors have come alongside one another to demand that their schools divest from all corporations and accounts that support the Israeli military and occupation. They have stood their ground in the midst of arrests and attacks from police, professors linking arms to form protective circles around students, many of whom ended up getting arrested alongside those that they teach. I watched a video of a professor yelling, "I'm a professor!" as cops tackled her to the ground after she stood up for a student who was being arrested with unnecessary force. I saw another video of a student at Emory University singing, "This joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me. The world didn't give it, the world can't take it away." As she was carried away, zip-tied by four police officers. There have been hundreds of students like this who have been arrested in the past week, but the encampments remain because new students and participants show up to take the place of those who are carted away. They're waiting in the wings, resting until they are needed to show up and bear that fruit of love, justice, and liberation. These courageous students, many of them from Gen Z, that generation right below me, are risking so much to show up in protest of genocide. They're not only risking arrest and bodily harm, but suspension, expulsion from their schools, potential lifelong impacts to their careers. And unlike many voices in the media would have us believe, they are doing this not because they are fueled by hatred, but because they are fueled by love. Love for the Palestinian people who they have watched suffering live on social media for 6 months. They want a better world for all people, for Palestinians, for Jews, for the rest of us, a world free from oppression and discrimination and colonialism and militarism, and they are showing us how true it is that nobody is free until everyone is free. As we watch the state try to silence them because they're standing up for the oppressed on the other side of the world, It reminds us that we are not free when we live in a country that tries to silence us for speaking out against genocide and the military-industrial complex. Love and community with one another are where we find freedom, and we get free together. And while I am so inspired by all that is happening in the name of Palestinian liberation and defunding war, I know that in this season of my life, as a breastfeeding mother, I cannot go to a protest and risk arrest and be away from my baby for that long. But I can write letters and emails and participate in boycotting, divestment, sanctions, so that more of my money isn't going to fund illegal occupation and military attacks. I can raise my children to be humans full of love and compassion for all people, like my daughter the other week who started pulling food out of our pantry to send to Gaza for the hungry kids. These small things are still important parts of the movement for liberation and change. And I also rely on the whole community to do the other more important visible work that I can't do at this time. And in the midst of it all, I rest in love, the love of Christ that motivates me to make a better world for all people. Knowing that we are part of a vine together with some branches bearing lots of visible fruit and others experiencing rest and renewal, where do you see yourself right now? Are you in a season of being renewed where you need rest? Are you in a season of fruitfulness? If you're in a season of rest and renewal right now, I hope that you can embrace that season with confidence, knowing that you don't have to earn a right to rest. Rest in itself is sacred, holy work. And contrary to the message of capitalism, we don't have to rest so that we can be productive. We rest because rest is its own important work. So let yourself rest and soak in all the love and joy and pleasure that life has to offer so that you can be renewed. Experiencing that goodness and renewal reminds us of the world we want to create and inspires us to live with greater love. And if you are in a season of fruitfulness, remember, you are not alone. And don't forget to soak in that energy of divine love for the vine from the vine, or you may find you are not able to sustain your work. Remember, you are not the only fruit-bearing branch on the vine. You bear fruit in the company of others who walk alongside you. You're part of something bigger than yourself. Your contribution matters, but it is one part, one small part of a living, breathing movement. Celebrate the fact that you're not alone. Find ways to connect and continue to be with others so that you can maintain that sense of community, like coming here on a Sunday morning, gives us collective purpose and a sense of our belonging, that we are loved, and empowering us to keep going. So whether you are in a season of rest and renewal or a season of fruit bearing, or maybe a little bit of both in different ways, know that you are enough just as you are, and that your presence is a gift to the whole vine of God's beloved community. When we dwell in love together, we will bear much fruit, and we will never be cut off from one another or the love of Christ that sustains us. And as we dwell together, God the gardener promises to nurture and care for us so that we grow into a thriving, healthy plant. And God, the expert gardener, not the novice like me, prunes with precision and care, confidently cutting out any signs of the diseases of hate, of supremacy, discrimination, violence, inequality, bigotry that threaten our ability to bear fruit and experience renewal, so that we can grow into our full potential as a healthy, thriving vine rooted in love for God and for one another. May we find comfort in Jesus' invitation to dwell in the vine, abiding in his divine love, believing that we are worthy, beloved branches with an important place in God's community. And may we believe Jesus' words that if we do abide in his love, that God will hear our cries for justice, joy, and peace on earth, and what we ask for will be done. In his name, amen.